Let me see what the hell are we gonna take up? Oh, yeah. SB 391, the ethical conduct of government. We have with us this morning,
Randall Burns.
Randall Burns.
Susan Cox.
And Susan Cox with us this morning from the Attorney General's Office. I think the first thing we're going to do is go over the proposed amendments to this bill that you've already drawn up and approve these particular amendments. We didn't do that, did we? We didn't approve them. But we wanted to review them one more time, then we're going on to where we left off, and hopefully we can finish this thing up and get another draft of the following amendments, and then we can go from there.
Okay.
Does that meet with your approval, Lisa? Okay. Okay, Cox and Burns. Sounds like a dance team.
Mr. Chairman, the First Amendment is on line 1, page 25. Page 1, line 25.
Okay, page 1, line 25.
Uh-huh. This was the one that was recommended because of the problem with the subsection B, where you felt the first sentence was basically allowing officers to hold conflicting positions, and you wished not to make it. Remove that statement. So we've rewritten it as removing the first sentence and then adding language that the legislature declares is a policy statement. A public employee is appointed to serve on a state board or commission, regardless whether such public service is required or may have potentially conflicting public responsibilities, that the holding of and taking out two or more such offices does not constitute the holding of incompatible offices. And then we've added, as long as it's not prohibited by the Constitution, this chapter and any opinions or decisions rendered under it or another statute. And we added that because while you may end up having, for instance, the Commissioner of Revenue serving on two different boards, and there may be some appearances of conflict.
Why do you have this other line, Randall? Why is this stuff undermined here?
Well, that's new language.
No, that isn't the better looking again, unless I'm reading it wrong.
Well, we think
it's new. Was that just emphasis added?
No, you're talking about on
page 1, line 25.
Right.
Mine says the legislature recognizes it may be necessary for public officers.
Oh, wait a minute, Bill. They haven't made the changes yet.
We haven't made the changes. Change. This is the amendment that we discussed.
This is the
That's
old
why it's bill. In all caps. We're trying to take that out.
Well, then wouldn't all of it be new language?
B would,
yes. The legislature declares it is a policy state, isn't that new too?
No.
Well, that's in the current bill, in the second sentence. So then we've just inserted with the language that's underlined.
Those are going to start to propose amendments to this draft bill.
You all right now?
No.
Okay, go ahead. Ask your question. What we did, if you recall, we went over this thing the last time we met. And we decided you didn't like some of that language in there, you didn't like it, in B. So I asked them to go back and propose amendments to B.
So they took out the original language and the legislature recognized it. You took that out, right?
Took that first sentence out.
Then what is the legislature declared that is a policy state? Is that new language?
No, that's the second sentence in part B, sir. On line 20, it starts on the end of line 27.
I see what you're talking about.
Okay.
All right.
So that's where the section
right
now, sir.
I got you now.
Okay.
I was still hung up on this line 25, and I kept trying to read it, and I see what you did. You took line 25, 26, and 27 out.
Right.
A little slow this morning.
Okay, is there any questions regarding page 1, line 25 in that particular amendment?
Looking on where we're
got it.
I'll tell you, our other suggestion was that you just delete it.
Yeah, well, what you're doing is you're really muddying it up when you say may have potentially conflicting public responsibilities.
Well, that's why
the holding of such offices does not constitute a law in fact. Well, you really didn't handle that. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
May I make a suggestion? This section was just intended to clarify that public officers, whether they're public appointed public officials or public employees, can serve on boards or commissions, and that in and of itself, being a public employee does not preclude you from being on a board or commission. But if there is a prohibition in the Constitution, this ethics legislation or another statute that would prohibit you, that's fine. But in and of themselves, public employment and serving on a board or commission are not necessarily incompatible, and that's the purpose of B. But if you think it's too muddy, we can certainly eliminate it.
Well, I think the second part of what muddies it may have potentially conflicting public responsibilities. That kind of.
Yeah, I think number one is.
Well, number one is fine, but number two seems to open it up again or say something else.
What we could do then is just say, whether such public service, take out the one is, just say, regardless, if one public employee is appointed to serve on a state board or commission.
Is required of the employee by statute.
Right, and is required by statute.
Oh, if such jobs are.
Does not constitution.
Unless it's presently.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
Now, show me exactly, now, read that in context, what, how it'll read. Before we do that, excuse me, before we do that, let the record show Senator Fisher, Senator Reese, and join us. Sorry, sir, go ahead.
I would say the legislature declares that it is the policy of the state when a public employee is appointed to serve on a state board or commission.
Which is required, required of the employee by the statute.
Right, which is required.
The holding of that.
And taking out that whole, so say.
Which is required of the employee.
That.
Oh, that, okay.
That is required. Of the employee by statute, taking out the, or two may have potentially conflicting public responsibilities.
All right, now, I want to go back.
Starting with or.
Such public service that is required of the employee by statute, or.
No, delete or.
And delete two?
And the next words, and the next words. All the way down.
By statute, have potential, that didn't make sense.
Yeah, or all the way down to responsibilities, sir.
Oh, take it all out?
Yeah.
Right.
Potentially conflicting public responsibility.
And I think we might have to take out that, too.
And take out that one, that.
That is required of the employee by statute, the whole.
The holding.
The holding of such office does not constitute.
Take that out too.
Compatible
wise. Can we call that out?
No, we'll keep that in.
So the read, when a public employee is appointed to serve on a state board or commission, regardless of whether such employee is such public service that is required of the employee by statute.
The holding of such office does not constitute the holding.
The holding of such.
That all stays in there.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go to number two then.
And this is on page 2, line 4. This is going to Senator Fisher's concern about the emphasis that we had placed at the beginning of the civil code. And so we've rewritten it, page 2, line 4. The legislature reaffirms that each public officer holds office as a public trust, and that any effort to benefit a person or financial interest through official action is a violation of that trust. A new sentence. In addition, the legislature finds, so long as it does not interfere with the full and faithful discharge of an officer's public duties and responsibilities, that this chapter does not prevent an officer from accepting employment outside state service or following other independent pursuits.
Okay, I think you have a redundancy. The redundancy is from accepting employment. You don't need that, you can say from following other independent pursuits.
Okay.
Because it seems to get mixed up when you say employment. And it's
sure.
Okay, what do you want to take out?
Prevent an officer from following other independent pursuits. That's
we'll be taking out accepting employment outside state
right.
Service or work.
Right.
Starting with accepting.
That's
that.
Okay.
So would we probably do more stuff with this chapter? So prevent an officer.
They got accepting employment outside?
So yeah, state services or.
Public duties and responsibilities following other. Read it in context.
Okay, in addition, I'll just read the underlying part here. In addition, the legislature finds, so long as it does not interfere with the full and faithful discharge of an officer's public duties and responsibilities, that this chapter does not prevent an officer from following other independent pursuits.
Following other, okay, fine. Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Minor technical amendment. After the comma, after responsibilities, should, I believe, be after addition, so it would read, after fines, so it would read, in addition, the legislature finds that, so long as it does not interfere, this chapter does not interfere.
Finds that?
So,
as long as it does not interfere, et cetera. Okay, any questions, additions, amendment 3?
Okay, the next one is on page 3, Mr. Chairman, line 18. These were, you deleted these in your amendments, but you said we could go ahead and bring back some proposed changes to you. So So number five, we decided, we took Senator Fisher's suggestion that the issue was an association. And so, but it's difficult to define. So we have rewritten number five. Instead of saying engage in a close economic association with a subordinate, we were saying if they jointly hold a financial interest with a subordinate, indicating a long-term or like in fact owning a condo together, something of that nature, and solving the problem with, yeah, like if you want to sell your car to somebody once, no big deal.
Any questions?
Oh, I don't think. You got a guy that you, so you got a friend that you work with in the legislature. Tim and I would own a boat together. Suppose that he's in the Anchorage and I'm in Juneau, and we get a boat.
It's not your subordinate.
Why not?
It's not a subordinate.
If we worked in a place, if we worked in a place, yeah. So Paul and I own a boat together. Then what?
Then you wouldn't be able to do it according to the. I think that's too dang restrictive.
Then you're in violation.
Well, unless you're in violation of Section 1 of
state five out.
The state constitution that says that everybody shall have equal rights and opportunities. That's what Ed Burke says.
Let's take what five out.
And you've already deleted it.
We've got a similar provision in the Legislative Ethics Code. You're aware of that, of course.
No, is it with a... Is it with a subordinate or is it with a lobbyist or something?
Not with a subordinate, with a lot.
Well, I'm not sure it's
a subordinate in there also.
There's a reason why, for example, I can't take somebody who works for me as a roommate. In the ethical.
Well, I've been knowing you've been trying for years.
I would strike that for you.
I've noticed he's very careful.
Wow. That's bad news.
Okay, I'd like to delete five. Any objections to the deleting five altogether?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it should stay in if it can be made subject to something or other. That'd be okay, but I think the principle needs to be there.
What's something or other? I mean, that's the problem we have.
Maybe we should put it, maybe we should make the determination as to the whoever's checking these things. Mm-hmm. Maybe it should be their determination. Yeah. If it's too close,
this be moved someplace else where it could be subject to determination.
Whoever's going to enforce this, if you're thinking about entering into a financial deal with somebody else, and so you say, and if it looks like it would interfere with your business or your job or something like that.
Well, what's the difference if you have to disclose it anyway? What we're doing is segregating us from the rest of the world and our friends. That's the way I look at it. It doesn't.
The purpose of this section, again, and the Close Economic Association, by the way, which is language that is also in the Legislative Ethics Bill, it is not defined as to what that means. And so we decided that you expressed concerns last week about that you didn't want to prohibit a subordinate being able to sell, for instance, a car, or a supervisor being able, if a subordinate wants to buy his car, you don't want to prohibit those one-time kinds of things. So what we did with this language was try to go to what we thought was the problem, which is when there's sort of an ongoing financial relationship between a subordinate and a supervisor, which in fact impacts on the way in which they have dealings with each other
business,
in the workforce.
Business. We don't want them maybe in the business with each other or something like that, where they would have that kind of deal, but if they own a car, we'll get to sell a car one day.
They could do that under the new language.
Yeah, under the new language, they could do that.
Jointly hold a financial interest?
Right, well, it's not an ongoing.
Yeah, you wouldn't jointly hold. If you sell something to somebody, that's not joint holding.
Right, yeah. So
we tried to solve the problem of that one-time mm-hmm. kind of thing and go more to the issue, which is the relationship sort of ongoing that may, in fact, remove the problem with some kind of your ability to be really objective about your evaluation of your employee. Mm-hmm.
You can put me on the record as opposing this. I believe in equal rights for everybody. Just because you're a state employee, I don't think you have any rights. So
pleasure of the committee.
I would oppose leaving that in, and I'd like to put the record.
I like the language, the amended language.
I don't know. I go back to taking 5 and 6 out and leave just in 7, but so it's up to you.
I don't like it in there either.
Mr. Chairman, what you want?
Guess we better make a vote on it. Those in favor of leaving in five?
As a new one?
Leaving the new five in on the amendment, which we've already taken out in originally.
Yeah, seven would cover the whole thing.
Yeah, that's to me.
Signify by saying aye. Seven, Harvard. That's taking out.
Hmm?
Taking out five.
We
know leaving five.
We're taking out five. We know what the vote is. It's 2-3. It goes out.
Goes out.
Okay.
Over my dead body again.
Well, I just think seven
down.
Does
seven
it all.
Down.
I think seven does it all, as far as I'm concerned. You know, and it, but.
All right, we're deleting five.
That's what we're trying to get to, I think.
Number six.
Number six was, again, there was a suggestion that perhaps we could put in some language like with a substantial value or something. We think that was too vague, and so we've rewritten to say you may not directly solicit a subordinate for the purpose of selling products or services with a value in excess of $25, so that people could be real clear about what they could and couldn't do in the workforce, and to know whether that solves your problem or not.
I still think seven takes care of it.
Okay.
All right, let's delete that too. Any objections?
This is a Tupperware deal. You know what you call it?
So we have it as long
any
as you
directions.
As
any,
long as you don't try coercion, then you can still do that under seven.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we've taken out five and six. Any objections?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I objected to taking out five.
You voted for taking out five.
No, I didn't. I voted against taking out five.
Well, it's 2-2. We take it out anyway, so.
And make any difference how
you walk right over
you voted.
You want it over your dead body.
We walk right over your dead body, Tim.
Senator Fisher.
Okay. All right, let's go to page 3, line 24, amendment number 4.
This was the suggestion, I believe, from Senator Ray and Senator Fisher regarding the language in the improper gifts or benefits section. What we have done is we have taken out the reference to benefits, so now it's just entitled improper gifts. And it would say a public officer may not solicit, accept, receive directly or indirectly a gift, whether in the form of money, service, loan, travel, entertainment, hospitality, employment, promise, or in any other form, that is a benefit to the officer's personal or financial interest under circumstances in which it could reasonably infer that the gift is intended to influence.
So you can go to dinner.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
That's good one.
And then we deleted that last sentence that you don't like.
Complimenting on that. That's good one.
Okay. Any further questions on that? Amendment number 3 or 4. Let's go to amendment number 5 on page 4, line 7.
Okay. This was, you had suggested, again, we're taking out references to benefits in the section, and as well as you increased the value of a gift that could be received up to $50.
Okay.
And then we changed the word benefits to effect on Senator Ray's suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Boy, you really have a stack of paper.
All right. Amendment number 5. Any other, any other statements on number 5? Let's go on to number 6, page 4, line 13.
We just took out the word or benefit since we were removing that from the section.
Any other questions? Let's go to amendment number 7,
same
page
thing.
4, 16.
Same change again, just removing the word benefits, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let's go to page amendment 8, which is page 4, line 20.
Okay, this was the section having to do with the improper use or disclosure of information,
right.
And Mr. Chairman, your suggestion that we not use the word communicated and make it even more clear using the word disseminated. And so we've inserted that.
Right, okay. Questions? Amendment number 9,
this
page
was,
6, line 20.
I'm sorry, this was the suggestion by Senator Fisher that there was some confusion, and so we have rewritten this section on, this has to do with outside employment, so that it now reads, shall quarterly report to the report the outside services or employment to the employees designated supervisor. We left out that reference in the prior
right.
language.
Really? Can we make a quarterly report of the activities outside your job?
This is the current requirement in the law.
You know, this doesn't make it right.
We only do ours once a year, so don't we? I mean, like the conflict of interest.
You only have to make
like
a disclosure statement once a year.
Yeah.
I think that's
so
how many people
necessary?
Are doing this? Well, actually, we weren't sure how many people were aware of it, but when we started going around to the departments and talking about the bill, a lot of them said it happens and people just do it routinely when they're outside employment. Yeah. Fish and game employees, natural resources employees, commerce employees.
There'll be a lot of fish and game.
I can't wait.
Won't be doing it.
It's about a semi-annually or something like this, right?
Or what's wrong with annually, except, you know, You report immediately.
Report any change or something like that, annually or any change, you know.
Yeah, that sounds a little ridiculous.
Okay.
Let's change that.
Not annually or any.
Are those things open to the public? Those records open to the public if they're filing them now?
Shall annual report outside service or employment. Public employee rendering services for compensation or engaging in employment outside the employment agency shall report all changes.
Well, I don't report the outside unless there is a thing.
Okay, fine.
Unless there's a change or.
Okay, amendment number 10, page 8, line 7.
This is having to do with the supervisors, how a person goes about solving their, and we just did this in, this is Senator Ray's suggestion that we clarify what we meant by that the supervisor may request guidance from the Attorney General in accordance with that section.
Restructuring.
Right, that's right.
So we took it from concerning to determining, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little bit stronger language.
Right.
Yes.
It's more clear about what the intent is.
Mm-hmm.
Questions? Yeah. Amendment number 11, page 8, line 24.
Same change, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. We were just
same.
New
Amendment number 12, page 9.
This was a confusion how we had made a shall. Same paragraph, so we're clarifying that the Attorney General shall issue opinions interpreting this chapter instead of the may language.
Okay. Amendment number 13, page 20, line 19.
This is, although it skips way ahead of the bill, this is just to reflect the changes that we made to the gifts and benefits section by removing reference in the to a benefit.
Except a gift book. Oh, I see what you're doing. Number 14, page 25, line 27.
Mr. Chairman, this is just a change which we can either talk about now or when we get to it, but it's something that we had neglected to put in under the personnel rule, allowing the personnel board to retain independent counsel when there's a complaint filed against the Attorney General, Governor, Lieutenant Governor. We put that in the bill itself, but we didn't give the powers to the personnel board, so we wanted to make sure we added that when we got there.
Okay. Now that's on, that's paragraph 8. How about 9? Same thing?
Those are currently in this bill. We just wanted to renumber them as well.
Or redone that. Okay, we do have amendment number, we do have 14 amendments, and we've made some changes in this document here.
Where did we leave off?
Page 9.
Mr. Chairman? Yes.
I have a conceptual amendment that we're going to run into somewhere. You know, one of the problems that Bill foresees is a tremendous amount of paperwork that's going to be involved. I don't think anybody is really looking at, and I haven't ever heard of a problem with a range 10 clerk, for example. That's not the person that this bill is aimed at. This bill is aimed at more of the policymakers, procurement officers such as that. And I would recommend that somehow we come up with a concept that, you know, you only have to go through this sort of thing if you're a range 16 or 17 or 18 or above. Because I just, you know, I don't see any necessity for the person, you know, the person who's been with the state 60 years, a temporary or a secretary or a clerk, to have to go through this whole process.
They don't do anything if they don't have any interest, then they don't have to do anything. So what are you saying? Unless they have some reasoning behind it, if they have some interest, outside interest, then they should report it. You can't make
two. It's just a mountain of paperwork.
The whole thing is, but you can't make two classes of employees.
Those that are subject to it and those that are not.
We have several classes of employees. We have collective bargaining employees, we have exempt employees, we have partially exempt employees, we have classified employees, we have a lot of different classes.
Well, partially exempt, classified, and are the same. I mean, they're all come under, most of them come under, except for one small unit, come under collective bargaining.
Bill, I can't for the life of me see why, you know, I just can't. It's not worth the hassle of the paperwork. We can probably eliminate about half of the people and still maintain the basic effect of the bill.
But how many of them are going to be, how many of them under 10 are going to even have any interest in the bill at all? How many are going to have private businesses, or how many of them, if they have a private business, that I should report.
My guess is a lot of the tens have different jobs, but, you know, at what conflict can it be?
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to that. Certainly our feeling is that ethics is for all of the workforce, not just for people on a range 10 or above, and I think we've tried to eliminate the paperwork. There currently already if they are working outside, filing those, and nobody seems to be objecting too strenuously to that, and that just goes to their designated supervisor, which is how they do it now. The only other thing that we've really added in terms of reporting is the issue of gifts. And again, I would say that I don't imagine there are that many people out there who are getting gifts of $50 on a regular basis. So I don't think there'll be, and it is a current prohibition. So again, I don't think they're gonna get a great deal of report. I just don't see that there'll be all that much paperwork. And I think it'll be difficult to distinguish between, I mean, if the secretary or truck driver is somehow abusing their office or the information they have available to them, I think they should be held as responsible as anyone else for their actions under this act.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt amendments 1 through 14 to committee sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 391. There is an objection. There will be a roll call.
Except for the ones that we eliminated. One of them.
As amended. You adopted.
As amended.
I amended.
As amended. Objections. Hearing none, so ordered. We now continue on with where do we leave off, Mr. Burns? Page 9, what? Advisory opinions?
Right on line 16, I believe.
Right. 9-16, okay. Attorney General may offer oral advice if delay would cause substantial inconvenience or detriment to the requesting party.
This is just to allow, if they need the advice right away, we can just give them the authority to go ahead and give it to them, or they'll put it in writing later, but go ahead and issue the advice to them.
The Senator agrees.
I think the last statement that Maggie said is important, though. They may issue it orally, but it does need them to be followed up in writing. And as long as, and that doesn't say that there, but as long as, you know, the clear intent, because it should be written. That's right. I mean, they can give it orally, but there needs to be followed up. And so, is there need to be that additional language put in B?
We can certainly do that. Although, okay. Since the A says that it shall be within 60 days, the attorney shall issue an opinion on the question. In A, we just wanted to let people know that they can get that advice sooner and orally, but we will follow it up.
Thank you.
So, should there be changes to it then?
I don't believe there's any, but we can clarify that if you think it's necessary, but I don't believe it either.
I don't think it does. Okay. Anything on C?
I just got it seems to me that if there is more than one way to go at it, it shouldn't be the designated supervisor should be the one that makes the determination. I think they should, maybe they should, after consultation with the employee, I mean, the designated supervisor might say, I want you to do this. The Attorney General says, you can go either this way or this way. And then the employee says, I'd like to go this way because it would make it easier for me. Then the supervisor says, no, you'd like to go this way.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the intent of leaving the decision-making in the hands of the designated supervisor was that in circumstances where the Attorney General couldn't estimate whether it was feasible to reassign duties, that decision has to be left to the manager in charge, the person in the department, who has to control the workflow. And so I think it should be up to the supervisor to decide whether someone's job function should be reassigned to someone else to accommodate that person's outside interest, or whether the department, especially in days of fewer personnel, whether
should
the department should...
I think we should consult with employees to say.
But we could certainly
after
add
consultation
that.
With employees.
I think they
made the supervisor or the board of commission after consultation with the employee shall determine the alternative. In other words, have some kind of a dialogue between whoever it is and the supervisor. Should have some kind of dialogue before the supervisor makes up its mind on what to do.
But has that already been taken care of in this?
No, it says if they advise the Attorney General more than one way for a public officer to avoid or correct the problem, the designated supervisor of the Board of Commission shall determine an alternative after consultation with the public officer.
But it's based already on the advice of the Attorney General on a written determination.
No, you...
According to the top.
Yeah, but I mean, the designated supervisor should talk to the employee who's in... Not, if the Attorney General says there's two ways to handle this, the designated supervisor should talk to the guy that they're working on in order to...
Well, if he's actually caused something to bring about a written determination from the designated supervisor or the board, mm-hmm. based on the advice of the Attorney General,
no, there's
the
two
deal is
ways.
Cut.
No, there's two different ways.
And he's done something wrong, we'll say. Then on the advice of the Attorney General says, well, now, supervisor or board, because of this infraction, this guy's, you got two ways to go on this guy. They're the ones that should make the decision, not the guy.
Well, you should talk to the guy first, though, I think.
For what?
Why not?
I'm assuming that they will have already, there will be, obviously, quite a few conversations with it. Because originally, the employee would have come to the designated supervisor with the problem in the first place. And unless they could have worked it out internally, which I assume that they will do in many cases, they would have then asked the opinion of the AG. And I think at that point, if they couldn't have worked it out in the department to begin with, that, that how that should happen and how they should cure that, that problem ought to be left to the supervisor to determine if they haven't already been able to do that. So they had to seek the advice of the AG in the first place.
Yeah, because if he's done something,
obviously you don't know too much about.
Well, if he's done something wrong to cause this kind of action, should be he shouldn't have to say, "Well, I want to be hung or I want to be shot." I mean, it should be up to the people that are putting down the penalties which way he can go.
But he's got two different ways. If he's got an outside financial interest of some kind, and they say, "Hey, you're going to have to eliminate this now. You can either sell it immediately or you can go on a contractual arrangement." I think that he should be consulted, at least notified, or they should discuss it. And if it doesn't hurt, he should have a say in which alternative to take.
I don't think it doesn't, as long as it's clear that after the consultation, the designated supervisor still had the option, I don't think that'll...
After, but we can certainly give the guy enough leeway so that he's a human being, just the same, you know.
Yeah, but the designated supervisor or the board shall determine the alternative that is most appropriate and advise the officer of any action required of the officer to avoid or correct the problem. So he does have the opportunity there.
After the...
Let's just put consult in.
Yeah, we can add that, Chairman. I don't think it'll...
It doesn't hurt anything.
Okay. D. Let's go to D.
We just, in this section, Mr. Chairman, we just wanted to make clear that once the officer has received the advice, that they're not liable then for any actions that they go ahead and take based on that advice, as long as they fully disclose. We want to make that clear.
Questions? E. Any questions on E? Questions on F?
Wait a minute.
E. Go back to E.
Including.
Including upon showing that material facts were, that's kind of bad language, isn't it?
No, it looks great.
Tim, you're going to get it back from the House now. Come on.
The Attorney General may reconsider, revoke, or modify an advisory opinion at any time upon showing that material facts were omitted or misstated in the request for an opinion.
No. Because you can do this anyway. You can also do that. If it includes upon a showing that material fact for a minute.
One of the things that we're concerned about is that you will give advice based on circumstances that an employee may represent to be true.
Okay.
F.
Questions? G. H.
Yes. how thick is the Alaska Administrative Journal going to be?
Big.
Isn't there some way that...
Well, we didn't.
They can publish significant advisory opinions. If there's some way we can lay that to somebody's discretion.
We can also just make them available from the Attorney General's office and not put them in the journal, but without that way.
Upon request.
They're always available upon request. We just thought it might be good to have those. There will be a substantial number. There's no getting around.
Granted, it's good, but we're talking about a great deal of money here because the Alaska Administrative Journal prints a lot of copies. They go to private firms.
We can fix that so they're available publicly from the Attorney General.
Why shouldn't the Attorney General on advisory opinions of substantial interest to the people? I mean, from time to time, he may publish them in the administrative journal.
We'll work
give people
like that then.
Okay. Basically,
did you have something?
You know what I'm saying? That's all.
Sure.
Did you have something?
Mr. Chairman, back on G, request for advice is confidential. How important is that? We had a situation just a week or so ago when one senator asked for some advice of the Legislative Ethics Committee. It had something to do with me. I was given a copy of that request. I got up on the Senate floor and talked about it. Apparently other people had seen copies of it also. What difference does it make if a request is confidential?
The reason we wanted to do that was because some people may have maybe revealing financial holdings and other interests that may be of a personal nature that ordinarily wouldn't be anyone's business, but because of a situation that has to be delved into. And it tends to be that if people are able to provide full information without having concern that it's going to be somehow flown around in public, that you will in fact get the kind of information you need at the outset. And there's no reason to a request making it public. That's not going to serve any function, because the real issue then is what the opinion is of the Attorney General based on that. And as long as that's available, people to use to guide themselves, but in the actual circumstances, it would not be public.
Oh, boy.
Senator Ray.
A request for advice? Who cares? I mean, I guess it's a...
Does that mean I have to, if I request advice of you, the designated this means that I have to keep it confidential, I can't tell my co-workers if I feel like
this, this is referring to the advice on the Attorney General. I mean, if they...
Well, if the guy wants to be confidential, then they should be, maybe that's the way you should do it.
Could we put in there a request for advice from the Attorney General's office made under this section is confidential?
Sure, we maybe clarify.
Does that clarify it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do
that. But then, what if I want advice on him?
Go ask him.
No, I'm asking the Attorney General for information on him.
It's confidential.
That's confidential.
But then if he knew about it, like in the situation that we just going on, he didn't release it.
It wasn't done that way with his deal with in the legislature.
Yeah, but he got a copy.
Well, this doesn't apply to legislature.
Yeah, so he got a copy of the request. So you would go to Randy and ask for an opinion on...
Yeah, but he wasn't the only guy to get copies of it. Everybody else got copies of it.
Oh, okay, well, I didn't. So, okay, so if he got a copy, then is it up, can he, under this section, release it?
Technically, no.
All right, let's change that.
Okay.
I mean, I guess our opinion is that if the person who's asking for the advice wishes to waive the confidentiality, they can do that at any time.
Make that clear.
It only, okay.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But then, if I want to make Victor look bad, all I have to do is send in a request. Is it true, it's my understanding that Senator Fisher does thus and such, or he has this and that, and then I publish it and make it, and they come back and say, no, there's no problem with that, or there's no...
And then I can't get a copy of this.
No, but I mean, it's already, the damage has already been done in the newspaper.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to clarify the difference between advisory opinions and complaints. Advisory opinions are issued when a designated supervisor can't deal with an in-house problem that's been revealed by an employee, and the supervisor needs guidance from the Attorney General's office. The request, currently under this section, the request from the supervisor to the Attorney General is confidential. The Attorney General can issue oral advice, and then we'll have to follow it up with a written advisory opinion. Once the opinion is returned to the designated supervisor, that supervisor then deals with the employee and works out the problem. That is a completely separate situation from the one in which someone files a complaint. And if someone complains against anyone, another co-worker, someone from the public complaint, then that complaint is also confidential until such time as the Attorney General established there is probable cause to believe a violation has occurred. Now, that's in later sections that we'll get to. Once a probable cause finding has been made, then the proceedings become public, but only at that point in time. So the person, when there are frivolous or complaints or ones that are not substantiated or filed, those do not become public at all.
Senator Ray.
A request for advice under A of this section.
Okay.
All right. It's right there.
H.
Under A. Oh,
yeah.
Right.
One. H.
We'll rewrite that.
I'm trying to find an A of substantial interest to, you know.
Okay.
why, in what respect is a former public officer going to make a requirement?
Maybe they were considering taking a job in a particular place that's a real close call and just want to get the guidance of the Attorney General's office. Maybe he's going and acting on some information that he was, wants to make sure that it's clear that the information was disseminated or not confidential.
And some guy that's because of the 2-year deal.
Right, that's right. Okay.
All right.
Backs up then to 240 advisory opinion said, right?
Right.
In accordance.
Go ahead and publish it.
Okay. Anything on B?
This is just making sure, clear, Mr. Chairman, that if they do get the advice, that they're not liable then for any actions they take once they receive that advice from the AG.
Questions?
Where are we? Where?
On B.
We're on
B.
B on line 17.
We got a very large door.
Okay.
Relevant facts.
Wait a minute,
reasonably
wait a minute.
Necessary? Come on.
Wait a minute. Any action carried out, what if it's the wrong action?
Yeah. Well, if it's based on the advice of the Attorney General.
You can't be wrong.
In accordance with the advice.
Okay.
If the public officer fully disclosed all relevant facts reasonably necessary.
So if they bend a little bit.
Let us go on, please. 260. 3952. Designated supervisor's report. Attorney General Review A. Any questions?
But this section requests that the supervisor's quarterly report to the Attorney General on, because there are lots of times when they'll be giving out information that they will not have consulted us on. We want to make sure that we can review those actions to make sure that they're not.
Does it have to be done on a quarterly basis?
We have monthly. So we backed off to quarterly, assuming that we don't want these to go on too long if, in fact, the advice given was incorrect or.
I see. Okay.
So we didn't.
That's protection.
Yeah.
B. Questions C.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on C. Line 7 is reference to.
Line what?
7. Making available to the public an extract of the reports received. Is an extract a summary or is it just pieces?
No, it would be a summary. But what our concern was here that we didn't wish there to be the appearance that somehow these people are filing these confidential reports. The AG's office is looking at them, and then that there's not some way for the public then to have access to those reports of what's going on internally so that they can see that there's not.
I know that. My question is, extracts means that you take pieces of the departmental report. Isn't the intent here really to have a summary?
Yeah, I guess we could. Yeah, we just. Words here.
Any other questions? Article 4, complaints, hearings, procedures. 310, complaints A.
This just states under the commission of the Attorney General can initiate a complaint or treat as anything that's come to his or her attention under the reports that have been filed in the previous sections as a complaint if something should come to light. I noticed, for instance, Mr. Chairman, that one of the provisions that the APEA had some objections to. Their concern was that if, for instance, you make a disclosure to your supervisor about a potential problem, and in some way they feel that this section, if it could end up being treated as a complaint, that would sort of reduce the number of people who would come forward. That's not the intent here. The intent is actually, if someone comes forward as they're supposed to do and asks for advice and seeks it and goes about the process, what we're trying to get at here is the person who knows, in fact, that they probably have a potential violation, avoids revealing that violation or that potential violation to their supervisor, and then when things start getting warm because it starts leaking out what's going on, then suddenly, as to solve this problem, they then ask for the advice. We want to make a distinguish between those instances when you're actually in a situation where you need the advice and not when you basically are attempting to get around the system by sort of suddenly turning to your supervisor when you know that you've been aware of the fact that you have this ongoing problem.
Now, but here's where we want this complaint to be confidential until next time.
It is. There's a section coming up that will make
confidential. Actually, we want that complaint to be confidential unless there is action.
That's right. That's right.
Is there any time limit on this at all?
It's a 2-year time limit.
It's a 2-year. That's also addressed another part of the bill, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, B. C.
This is the section.
Personnel board is going to try the governor? Come on.
No, the personnel board retains independent counsel to do that.
Who makes up the personnel board?
There are three individuals appointed by the governor, but we have amended the personnel statute to add language that would say that they could only be removed for cause, which is not ordinarily put in those statutes, so that the governor could not be firing them when he's under investigation. That's back at the back of the bill under when we amend the personnel statute.
Well, governor may feel it's a good cause if they're.
I doubt if the courts would find it. I doubt if the courts would find that it's a good cause.
Any other questions on C? Go to D.
This just makes it clear that the Attorney General shall review the complaints and if find determines that they're true, ask additional information, and then you can dismiss the complaint. Okay. If it's out of space, there's no.
E.
Wait a minute. How about the suspected party here? How does he? Does he get a copy of the dismissal too? Or
yes.
That's at the top of page 12.
On top of page 12, the Attorney General shall dismiss the complaint with notice to the complaint and the subject of the complaint.
Notice to the complaint.
Hey, we're a little ahead of you there, kid.
All right, and the subject of the complaint.
E.
If it looks like it's something that the supervisor really could have handled, then it can just go directly to the supervisor.
F.
Oh, wait a minute. The complainant, that's the guy that makes the complaint, isn't it?
Right, and then we say, and the subject of the complaint. D, the Attorney General reviews it. If he decides that it constitutes and decide whether or not it is or isn't valid. If he decides that it's not valid, he goes ahead and dismisses it and allows him, letting him know. And then in the next section, if he accepts it, he also serves a copy on the subject.
Yes.
So they'll find out either way. This section just says how the Attorney General will go about processing the complaint once he's accepted it, or she's accepted it, for processing.
Let's not be so definite that the failure to answer within a prescribed time is considered an omission. The allegations may be considered an omission.
Okay.
Hang him, but don't find him guilty, see?
It may be considered. I mean, we don't want to make sure.
The problem is that they tend to drag your heels in the system.
Yeah.
Well, so, but I mean,
all right, change that around. Change that somewhat and make it a little bit more clear. G.
This just states that if the complaint is in fact accepted, then the AG will investigate.
I'm a little concerned about the subpoena powers that early in the game. A lot of subpoenas, perhaps. Are they necessary?
Well, at this point, they're actually investigating whether or not, in fact, there's validity to the complaint. In order for them to determine that, that's the point at which they'd have to, if it was dealing with records and things, they'd have to have access to in order to determine that. We haven't used it prior to this, but at this point in the investigation, it's when they need access to records and things of that nature to determine whether or not, in fact, the complaint was valid.
Further questions? H.
This is just the
two-year
right,
discovery.
Ms. Chairman.
Senator Fisher.
Is the 2 years, is that after discovery of the alleged violation? What if the discovery is 5 years after the alleged violation?
That means we have 2 years to prosecute.
2 years.
Oh, that's not.
You mean you can go on and on? You can go on for 10 years and then you find a discovery and you got 2 years to try it?
No, it's just the work. Let's say, for instance, that there's in fact someone who's been going through or has either previously violated and is now ceased, or the violation is continuing, it's been going on for a number of years. We're not aware of it, it doesn't come to our attention, but finally it does. We then have 2 years from the date in which the violation is discovered to go ahead and process it.
Even if the person's out of state employee and has been for 2 years?
Former.
Then what are you going
to
do?
Within the 2 year period, we would have the ability to go ahead and prosecute once they left us. State service. If after that period of time there was no, and then we couldn't do anything.
We still have a lot of hope left.
That's just a statute of limitations.
Sorry about that, Sonny.
You want to change it to 5 years?
Okay, let's go on. 2 years. Okay, the unwillingness of a complaint. Complainant.
This section, Mr. Chairman, we have in here because sometimes what will happen is a person will complain and then a great deal of the complainant, a great deal of pressure is sometimes actually placed on the complainant to, you know, maybe there will be the employee or the person complained about will attempt to dissuade them or to withdraw the complaint.
Okay. Let's go back to H here just for a second. Is it enough to say it may be investigated? Is that enough to say it?
As opposed to shall?
No. I mean, it says it may be investigated. Okay, so he investigated. I mean, investigated and charged or pursued or something. He just investigated. Is that enough?
Mr. Chairman, yes. In the following sections, then we go on. Once it's investigated, then you will either dismiss it before proceeding to a hearing or go to a hearing. There's no interruptions.
All you're saying is you may investigate, so. Anyway.
Well, we want to make sure that they have the authority to investigate.
Right.
Okay. In other words, then if a complainant decides
to withdraw,
well, I've had enough of this. It's been 2 years now, and I've had enough of it. I don't want to go through this anymore. It's cost me too much money.
Well, actually, it wouldn't cost the complainant any money. What usually happens is there's pressure. For instance, the bar association or office. Sometimes attorneys will go to their former client and say, you know, try to, with whatever means, dissuade them from going in with their complaint. We want to make it clear here that once a complaint is filed, we're aware of it. Just because the complainant decides to back off isn't in and of itself justification for the AG from continuing.
So we've got to keep moving. I understand it. All right, let's go on.
You don't want to do this.
320, dismissal before formal proceedings.
This just says that if, after they've investigated, that there's no probable cause to believe that a violation has occurred, then the Attorney General dismisses it and prepares and files a confidential summary of the personnel board. We wish that to occur so that there's some review of what the Attorney General is doing, i.e. he's not just willy-nilly dismissing these, so there's a review of that.
Okay, 330. Also, bring the matter of disposition probably and complain into the subject.
Didn't you say back here that they should tell the supervisor? Now the Attorney General should tell the subject, and before I thought you had it with the supervisor. Come up with the idea.
On which section?
Section
339.
Did you say that the supervisor had two alternatives?
The supervisor had two alternatives to the complaint.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond briefly, the supervisor may have alternative choices where a violation hasn't taken place and there's a prospective problem, and the supervisor has gotten advice from the Attorney General. This is a complaint situation where a violation has or has not already occurred, and the Attorney General is investigating. It's a completely separate situation from where you're seeking advice. Here, there's been allegations that a violation has already happened. It's too late to ask advice now. We're into a complaint setup. And
it's
at that point, the Attorney General.
Time.
Okay, E.
This is the confidentiality provisions. This just says that before the initiation of formal proceedings, the information regarding the investigation obtained by the Attorney General is confidential. And then anyone contacted during the course of the investigation must maintain that confidentiality.
Should you tell them to? Do they tell them, does the Attorney General or the people
inform them of this?
Inform them that this is confidential and if you
invite
anyone?
We wanted to, in B and C of that section, though, on 18 and lines 18 and 20, obviously make it clear that a person can contact an attorney if they wish to.
And this would also apply to the attorney, too,
that's
confidentiality.
And C, that there may be lots of reasons why the person who's complained about may prefer that the confidentiality waived and go ahead and have it all be confidential, and they have the right to do that. I mean, be open, and they have the right to do that.
What about the person that's being complained against, and he's and it leaks out to the press? Is he allowed to defend himself in the press?
How do you defend yourself?
Well, I mean, they're going to come ask you. What are you going to say? I can't say anything?
Mr. Chairman, line 20C says the subject of the complaint may waive the confidentiality. The confidentiality is there to protect the person who's the subject of the complaint. But if it's preferable to them to air
public. Okay, 350.
Wait a minute.
may waive the confidential protection of the section. He can waive his own confidentiality, but not the Attorney General. I mean, just because he wants to talk about it doesn't mean everybody else should be able to talk about it.
Well, it's only for his, it's established for his protection, for the subject of the complaint.
Once he waives it, it's open sesame.
It's open to everybody.
Right. Yeah, I like C, with the understanding that the employee may waive their own confidentiality in the process.
That doesn't mean the Attorney General starts.
No.
Yeah, but then the subject, he says stuff that is questionable, and then the attorney...
There's no defense for it from the Attorney General.
We're just going to have to
get... Gee, I can't say nothing about it.
We're going to have to get the benefit of the doubt for the public employee, aren't we?
If I might, how this probably perceived this to be working is as follows. Lots of times, well, as many of you well know, or some of you know well, others, a good example is to use the APOC in terms of complaints that are filed with the APOC. Right now, they are not confidential. What we are saying here is when someone files a complaint...
Wait a minute, what was that again?
Complaints filed with the APOC right now are not generally considered confidential, i.e., you can, as you well know, they often bring them down.
It's in the bill, but it's not law.
Yeah.
Okay. What happens is oftentimes they'll let the press know, as well as everybody else, that people are filing a complaint. What we'd like to make clear here is that once a complaint is filed, that the individual who's filed the complaint may not discuss that complaint, may not say that they filed the complaint with the Attorney General. They can discuss the underlying facts, but they cannot say that they filed the complaint.
Yeah, you did say something to the effect that they sometimes do these things. APOC sometimes does that. I take umbrage to that. Let's go on. Can I just get that in? Okay.
The next section is probable cause. This just says that the Attorney General determines that there is probable cause to believe that a violation has occurred.
What's the legal interpretation of knowing violation? What's a knowing violation?
Isn't that done by the original investigation to start with, or the complaint made to the Attorney General, and you determine that it's a knowing violation?
Something that, for instance, they granted a grant to the business in which they have financial interest. Obviously, they would be aware
of a different word than knowing violation.
No, that's pretty standard. Uh-huh. In fact, it's real standard.
Nobody really even know what you're talking about with another attorney.
Well, that's...
Tries to believe that a knowing violation. A knowing... What do you say?
The difference would be this. Let's say, for instance, that someone filed a complaint against you as a public employee, and it was something that you hadn't even given a thought to, weren't even acting on. Something, let's say, it was a personal interest maybe in some group, and that you hadn't even given it a thought. You weren't really acting on it consciously and making your decisions. You hadn't talked to anybody about it. And then and you're really unaware of this potential conflict, and someone complains about your conduct, though. You ought to have some protection from the fact that you yourself, had you been aware of this, would not probably have acted that way.
Wait a minute.
So there's a standard there.
I don't understand.
Anyway, we've been arguing about, since I've been in the legislature, the word knowing and reasonable
right.
and unreasonable, and we're going to continue to do it. I wouldn't like to see us get hung up on that one word. That's pretty standard boilerplate language for about every law we've got. So why are we exercising this?
I don't know what you're referring to. Well, I think I've been in the legislature as long as you have.
No, you've been here longer. You're still talking about it longer than I have.
I've never seen it used in this context. And you want to tell you the truth? That's why I questioned it. I've never seen it used that way. An annoying violation of this chapter.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, knowing just implies an intent, an awareness. Now, that's not subjective, that's objective. Should you have known that you were violating the violation has already taken place.
Anything further on 13? If the Attorney General initiates formal proceedings based on this knowing violation,
uh-huh.
and then you go over on the next page after the service of this, and you've already specifically set out the alleged violations,
right.
How can it be? How can this accusation be a public document open to inspection? Why isn't that confidential?
If we set this up so that while the investigation is going on and they're looking into whether or not in fact there's any validity to it, that's confidential. If it's dismissed, that's the end of it. However, if the Attorney General determines that there's probable cause to believe in fact that a violation did occur, at that point it becomes public. And so the document that says to the employee or the officer that we have reason to believe that they have violated the chapter, that document that served on that employee is a public document, similar to...
Okay. And B. Anything on B?
The rest of this section, Mr. Chairman, just deals with the procedures for going about.
Okay. Is there any questions on all the way down to line 16? Personnel, the board is going to impose the penalties?
That's correct.
Hearings.
This just sets up, this section sets up the hearing procedures. A hearing officer is appointed by the personnel board. They set the time and place for the hearing. They are administered the oaths at the hearing itself.
Okay. You want to be definite again under B that if he doesn't answer the time, that is an admission of guilt. You want to be definite again on that. Or do you want to give yourself the opportunity to maybe?
Mr. Chairman, there's nothing to answer at this point in time. You've already answered are you looking at...
He's on my seven.
Oh, you're back. Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you want to make it definite? I'm just questioning.
Yeah, we would prefer just because, again, it forces the procedure all along. Otherwise, these things just...
You're going to look at that again? Okay, let's go on.
Okay, near the bottom of page 14.
Hold it just a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're down to line 24, the end of it. Is there any questions prior to that on the hearings area? Just a second. Let's go on.
Okay.
C.
And C, this just says that the Attorney General presents the charges to the hearing officer, and that he has the burden of demonstrating by preponderance of the evidence that...
Oh, have we been into that? Have we? It's not clear and convincing, a preponderance of. Okay. D?
This just says that the parties to the hearing are the Attorney General and the subject of the accusation. It makes it clear that they can be represented by counsel.
Administrative Procedures Act does not apply to the hearings.
Okay.
F, technical rules of evidence do not apply.
These are public hearings, however, and they would be recorded, and copies of the transcript, et cetera, would be available.
G?
This just says that the hearing officer could direct at the end of the hearing both parties to submit findings of fact, conclusions, and recommendations.
Senator A?
I was just looking at the copies of the transcript. You're going to give free copies to the Attorney General, but the guy that's the subject has to pay for it. That's great. You guys are really important.
No, they probably wouldn't be transcribed unless there was actually a request. This just says that they're all available. They can just, and that means copies of the transcript, that just means if they were made, they could have them.
But you're going to give them a copy of the recording, okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Very expensive.
Okay, G. H.
This just says that the hearing officer has 30 days after the hearing which to issue his or her findings and report them to the personnel board.
Okay. 70, personnel board action.
Okay. Personnel board then, within 10 days after receiving, makes sure that both sides have copies of it. And then if there's an objection to the findings of the hearing officer, then either side can file them.
Question. Are there any questions on B?
Yeah, what's the hearing you know about?
Sir?
Starting brand new.
Sir?
That's a whole new hearing.
Okay. Any questions on B? C. Any questions on C? Deliberations of the personnel board must be conducted in sessions not open to the public. That doesn't violate the public.
It's a quasi-judicial body. It's like when the judges are reaching their decision, they don't do that in public.
Okay.
And these would be held.
D.
This just sets out then what penalties they can prescribe once.
Okay.
The personnel board, a quasi-judicial agency?
They would be as a result.
But you're making it one now.
That's right.
At what point do you get back to the AG for criminal activity or for violation?
In the violation section, which is coming up, it talks about, but actually what we have given this board, personnel board, we've given them a lot more civil penalties than criminal penalties. Those are in addition.
But can it get back to the AG? Can the AG prosecute if they feel it's serious enough?
The district attorney would, yes.
I think it can end it all under F by going to the Superior Court and that'd be the end of it. Right?
They can't appeal.
How can the state get to the court system? What you're saying is you got to go back to the personnel board, right? how do they get from the person who...
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to Senator Kelly. The Attorney General can go to a district attorney and file criminal charges at any time. This bill is civil in nature and completely independent. We have not included civil penalties in this, I mean criminal penalties in this bill. So the existing criminal penalties in Title 11 for bribery and abuse of office and so on would still apply in any circumstance. For a violation of the Code of Ethics, we only have the civil penalties that are in this bill, and they would be meted out by the personnel board. If the subject of that is uncomfortable, they can appeal in court.
F.
This just says that they can appeal the personnel board's filing.
Okay, Section 380 subpoenas. Any questions? B, any questions on B?
What page are we on now?
Well, we just turned from 16 going to 17. Okay, 390, service. Any questions on service?
Is this serving of subpoenas and such?
Yes, and documents of that nature.
Okay, would you, just a sec, now the pleasure of the committee, we can continue on with Article 5. Another little bit, I've got one more bill I want to bring in front of you again. What's your pleasure, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I defer completely to the chairman on this. I'm real interested, though, in possibly tracing now or next time exactly what would happen under subsection D at the bottom of page 17. That pertains to violation by public officer removable from office only by impeachment, let's say the governor, shall be reported to the Senate.
How about the House?
In the House. Well, my question is this. I believe that I would like to get into this other bill. I don't think we can finish this today, and we've got a lot of discussion
so
going on.
In the dirt turn
yes, house. It's their possession.
I would like to be able to, stop right here, and then I want to start it again, probably begin tomorrow. We have this other bill tomorrow. We do, we'll come into it on tomorrow.
Mr. Chair,
if we could request counsel at that point to maybe walk us through from page 11, where it says that if a complaint alleges a violation by the governor, et cetera, it shall be referred to the personnel board and special counsel's appointment. Sort of how that is handled all the way through.
Would you please establish a scenario for us, if you will?
So we can and also explain to us how we can
Mr. Burns,
maybe he should have. He's found guilty of it.
Mr. Burns, would you also bring up, bring together another document on the amendments that we've made from page 9 on? If you would, starting with amendment number 15, I would presume. I believe that's what it is where we left off. Okay, we'll hold the bill, and thank you again for your time. And
Jerry, I wanted to ask you, what was the result of your poll of your membership on the race issue?
Okay.
Well, you're not releasing that information.
No. That's confidential.
This is
a public employee.
This is committee subcommittee for House Bill 454. 454. You have a work draft in front of you, dated 4/7/86. I'm sorry. Okay. Carol, bring me up to date where we left off on this. This is a new.
Mr. Chairman, this is a new work draft in response to several amendments that were made at the last hearing. The first one is on page 1. On the draft dated 4/2/86, on page 27, after committee business was deleted for an interim committee of 11.
Wait a minute. 27, page 27.
We don't have page 2.
We don't have page
1, line 27.
Page 1?
Page 1, line 27.
Okay, go ahead. Oh, while on committee business or other legislative business in a place that is not the legislative place of permanent residence.
We deleted after business for an interim committee of the legislature.
Line? Page, please, I didn't get...
Page 1, line 27, after business.
Oh, after business, okay. All right, next one.
It also gets up on page 2, subsection 2, line 6, after business, we deleted for an interim committee.
Put in for other legislative business, right?
On page 2, line 40. After a file with, we used to have the executive director of the Legislative Affairs Agency. That has been changed to the legislature's fiscal office in response to the memo by Jim Holden.
Questions on that? Okay.
On page 4, line 9, subsection B used to be subsection F. We moved it up. And then renumber the other subsections.
No.
Questions?
No. The commission shall not. We're saying they shall review the constitution. I thought that we were going to allow them upon request to do it. Here you have them mandatorily doing it.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fisher.
What we did was, in the proposed constitutional amendment, we said that the that the legislature may authorize the commission.
We may ask them to make it mandatory.
Put the findings into effect, the same as the legislature. But the purpose here is to simply advise the legislature. This is not mandatory in any way at all. I mean, it doesn't go into effect. The recommendations don't go into effect under this. This is simply advice to the legislature.
Commission in this situation would automatically do it, but it would not be mandatory
for the legislature to
implement it.
Right. Even under a constitutional amendment.
Yeah. At one time we had At one time we had it that the legislature could request them
That's what I thought we were doing.
You were here last time.
Well, it doesn't always, what we were doing doesn't always come out in writing.
Yeah.
I thought the police said that they may review it upon direction. With the constitutional amendment, it says that we could direct them to do it. That was permissive in there.
Well, wait a minute.
So
we're
mandatory.
We're going to 4 on line 7. It says the commission shall review the salary, benefits, and allowances of the members of the legislature and submit a report of it on a time at least once every 2 years, but not more frequently than every year.
That's fine. But then it goes on and says, now you got a mandatorily reviewing the governor, lieutenant governor, justices, and the heads of principal departments.
Doesn't that refer to the A?
No, that's a separate.
No.
Why don't we have it refer to A?
A is legislature. B is
I thought we said that we may have them review it.
If we
make provision under the constitutional amendment for them to do it, they can do it. But here, we're saying under there that we may have them do it, and under here we say they must do it.
No. Under the constitutional amendment, the legislative salaries go into effect.
No, I'm not talking about going into effect at all.
May I finish?
Senator Fisher, you had the floor.
Under the constitutional amendment, the legislative salaries go into effect upon recommendation of the commission. And then it says the legislature may ask the commission similarly, the legislature may provide for the commission's recommendations and other salaries also to go into effect automatically.
On the 4-2-1, on one of my 4-2s, it says, if requested by the legislature, the commission shall review the compensation, benefits, and allowances of other state officers and report its recommendations to the legislature.
Yeah, and report its recommendations.
So we had it one time.
It doesn't say anything about it going into effect.
Oh, no. And I don't think this says
anything. Well, maybe Victor thought that. Maybe that was what you wanted it to do, but it didn't say it.
Mr. Chairman, how does the legislature request the commission to do it? except by specified.
By statute.
And this is a statute.
But,
what is the
point? Are we going to do it? Is that what you're saying, that we're going to do it?
Right.
Oh, well, that's the idea. But I don't think that I want them to do it, unless we tell them to do it.
But, Mr. Chairman, my thought is that we ought to tell them to do it.
The difference of opinion.
Okay. Well, you just disagree with the approach.
Yeah. Here, but it says in the constitutional amendment, it says you must review the legislative salaries and the recommendations have the full force and effect of law and go into it effect immediately or 30 days later. We may ask them to look at the other salaries for our consideration. Mm-hmm. Okay, now here you're saying that you have to look at them.
Okay, what do you want? Do you leave the words? Do you want to put may?
Well, I thought may. To make it consistent is what I'm thinking. Unless you want them to do it,
well,
then
Mr. Chairman,
have to do it under this.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that we should have this commission, if it's established, also provide recommendations on the governor's salary and the department heads. The legislature sets those.
Yeah, we set them.
So it seems very appropriate that they go ahead and do it.
The commission shall, upon request of the legislature, review the salary.
But how does a legislature request? By law?
By anything. Unless you put it in law.
By letter.
Do it by letter.
My gosh, Bill, they got to have something more to do than just legislative salaries. That'll take 10 years over 2 years.
Good. That's just fine with me.
But they got to fly down to Juma for that 10-minute work.
Okay, what's the pleasure of this committee?
I don't mind the existing language. I mean, I think it works.
I think we ought to take a look at it.
I don't think it does.
I think they should take a look at it.
All right.
I'd like to know what somebody else thinks the government would be paid in the
country. That's right. Put their feet in the fire for a change.
I think they're going to find those folks aren't able to pay at all.
Okay, let's go on.
If you want to see, it says the commission shall submit its preliminary finding and recommendations for the compensation.
Okay, maybe they recommend no change.
By November 15th.
Maybe they recommend no change, too. I'd like to have a look at it. Damn it. They're the ones that have responsibility. Okay, what's the next one, Carol?
The last one, Mr. Chairman, is a technical amendment on page 5.
On page 5?
On page 5, we've just inserted a comma, line 2, after effective.
Let me get this one back.
Okay.
And that's it.
All right. Any other further questions? Did we go through the section 10 and all these sections take effect and so on and so forth?
The House version had the commission establishing it, not just telling us what they should do.
This is another one of your gun control ones that you don't know what any talk about.
We do have a few effective dates. You want to take a look at that on page 5, section 7. The commission shall submit its first final report to the legislature by January 10th, 1987.
See, if you look down here in the F, you got the same thing. You did not concur in the proposed or final recommendations made and attached written objections to the commission report. Jesus Christ. Okay, there. All right.
And why is that in there? I mean, they can do that anyway.
True. Probably proceed.
Now, wait a minute. What, we didn't do that, Bill.
That's been in all along.
That was in the House bill.
But when you change, we just couldn't change anything in the House segment.
No.
That would be a terrible thing. I forgot. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Did Senator Ray make a motion to eliminate subsection F?
I didn't do anything.
I think, did I hear that?
None of you guys. I'm voting against it now.
Are there any objections to Senator Ray's motion?
I don't have a motion. Can you guys get off of me?
All right. In that we do have this, I'd like to adopt. Let's see. This
Mr.
is
Chairman, shall we remove subsection F? It doesn't. It really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but it might be just a little kind of.
Oh yeah.
Are you sure to leave it in?
Probably Foxon's amendment, right?
You think? Oh my God, look at that.
Commission member did not concur. Who gives a damn whether one commission member?
You know, the truth is, they can
concur or not concur.
Probably not necessary, but if as long as it's in there, it might as well leave it.
They just take a vote on it. What the heck?
Yeah,
you got the same intent of the final recommendations. Like the final recommendations are going in